Cliffcentral.com.
I've got something important to tell you.
Cliffcentral.com.
What would the world look like if there was no help? Now, if you haven't caught on, our aim as MAID is to reimagine the role of help in South Africa. So this is a question that Tuliza and I get asked pretty often. The truth is, we don't know the answer to this question. But it's always interesting to entertain different possibilities, which is what we'd like to do today in a game of If There Were No Help. Are you excited?
I'm nervous. I'm not at all prepared, so I'm very nervous.
Well, if it helps, I just completely made this game up. Okay, so I'll start us off with, if there was no help, people would have less children.
Ooh. I would partly agree. I mean, I think I'd also like wonder about religion and how religion would play a role in things like birth control and curbing that kind of stuff.
It is a possibility, but I don't even know if I'm convinced, to be honest. Because we just live in a world where it feels like people procreate in spite of anything. So I suppose it depends who you look at and what are the factors that go into contraception, right? So education is a big one. So maybe people who are more educated would have less kids.
Yeah, and that's statistically true.
But I do wonder about the lower classes and if it would have an effect. Kind of middle to lower.
Yeah, and especially because they might be less prone to being able to afford help.
Mm.
And yet they are more prone to having children, more children. Mm. So, yeah, I wonder how much of a direct correlation it has to each other.
Because if you think about it, I mean, people have kids in spite of, you know, just look at social welfare. There's 17,000 people in South Africa. No, not 17,000. There's like, is it 17 million people reliant on social welfare? Something like that.
Yeah,
it's definitely not 17,000. Something of the 17. And yeah, if I just think about my cousins from like the rural areas who I grew up with, and we used to play all the same games, and I was really close to them. Started having kids at about 16, 17, some of them 15. And I always remember being so shocked because I could identify with them till that point.
But there is also the perception in some low economic class sectors, I guess, where they also believe that the more children you have, the more possibility you have to get out of poverty.
Mm.
And not just through social welfare, but also through the opportunities that you can grant each child that maybe one of them will become successful.
In our house, we always joke about how, like, and I mean, it hardly happens in our house, but we always joke about how, like, parents feel so entitled to asking their kids to do stuff. And I joke about it because it was kind of a joke in our home, right? Because, like, we always had enough help that my mom didn't need us to do everything. But certainly if we didn't, and certainly if we had less money, that wouldn't have been the case. So, you know, I probably, and maybe a different mom. You know, I think she was really actually abused that way as a child. Like, her siblings really became kind of the help in the home and the workers. And that was standard. That was just how you grew up back in the day, right?
How many siblings were
like
there?
And eight.
Which number was she?
She was last born. So
okay.
It was actually the least for her. But it was just expected that they would work in the fields. It was expected that they would clean the house. It was expected that they would do the cooking, look after the pets. It was all of the, over and above then doing well in school. But I sort of wonder if that is about resources that makes that thing happen. Or is there just like a mindset? So I guess I wonder even then in the higher socioeconomic classes, if there were no help, whether that mindset would kick in. And then I also wonder about like girl children, for instance, and their role.
I think, I mean, to be honest, I have no idea how a mother or father would take care of 8 kids without having help from those kids.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, I think every human being should be able to be self-reliant. Mm. I think it should be in some way like a human right to be taught how to be self-reliant, you know, because you see so many kids who have a very sheltered or spoiled background that, you know, when the moment comes or the moments come when those that sheltered them aren't able to be there anymore, that they literally have no idea what to do. And it's not that, you know, the world offers you the room to learn on the spot all the time. Mm. There's some things that the world presumes you must know by the time you're a certain age or if you're in a certain environment. Some are unfair, but a lot of the things are intrinsically not, so, because at its fundamentals you should have learned it.
So are we kind of saying that the likelihood is that the more educated socioeconomic classes would be inclined toward contraceptive, and then the less resourced would be potentially inclined to have more children?
Yes, so I think that the upper economic class could make that decision based on their capacity to afford help or their, you know, or their relationship with contraceptives. Because very wealthy people can also be very religious. And so that might also determine how they decide to have children. But I think their access to help could strongly influence how many children they decide to have. Because again, some wealthy people just like having a lot of children.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So basically the answer is it's complicated.
It's so complicated.
Maybe this is why we don't answer people. If we had no help, we would be less civilized.
Abso-freaking-lutely. This is the thing. Okay, now, the role of help is to dignify and to civilize our society. But the way we treat helpers often is the opposite of that.
I mean, I just quickly want to know, though, that very first person that got the idea to have someone that cleans up after them. And then...
It's probably a stepsister. I'm telling you, Cinderella is true. That's how it started. I'm telling you. I think that they were either siblings or step-siblings. You know how in Cinderella her dad dies and then... No, not her dad. Her mom dies and then her dad marries the evil... stepmom, and then the kids and the stepmom turn her into the help, and so she goes from, like, and it's her dad's money, which is, who died?
I don't know. Hey,
it feels like
as you're saying
Cinderella.
The story, I realize I don't remember Cinderella.
No, I think her mom died and then her dad died. I think she's both died, and then she's an orphan. She's left alone with her dad's
stepmother.
Yes. Her dad's former wife, and then the two kids.
Yeah.
And she becomes reduced to being the help. She goes from this, like, very comfortable, very lavish life of love and opportunity to living in the basement.
Yeah.
So I think it might have been, like, something like that. It feels like... Something about it feels familial. Like,
I'm still going to the cave times. I really am. I mean, like, I think there's sort of hints of it. I mean, if you believe in the Bible, like there are hints of it already in the Bible. But, like, it starts off where they talk about women that are a help. They are made for a help for man or for men. You know, so it's not just, you know, companionship and love,
definitely.
But as a help, right? But that's what it starts as. And if that's the role that women took on from the very beginning, again, let's just, like, say as an example, they took that role on when they were in the beginning. And then at some point they must have realized, oh my God, I'm not good enough as a help, or I'm not enough as a help, and I need more help so that I can be a decent help or enough of a help. And then, yeah, in whichever capacity that help came along. But I guess what I wonder is, were people living beyond their means, beyond their capacity? How did that happen? How did it happen that your own life wasn't manageable to yourself?
I don't know if that's what happened. I think people became maybe more aspirational rather than, like, having a life that wasn't manageable. I think the human mind has probably grown much faster than our capacity. So I think there was people suddenly maybe had, I don't know, hobbies or aspirations that went beyond the family home or the domestic environment and things that they would rather do. So I think it's self-actualization. I think it's aspiration. I think it's technology, maybe to some extent, career. I don't know what about it feels male, right? That kind of pursuit of more in spite of anything. Just that wanting more, 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 more. More happiness, more resources, more space, more friends, more opportunities, more, more, more. And I think that's kind of, and you know, men are hunters, I suppose, and women are gatherers, right? So from that caveman or cave life perspective, we already play different roles. And I feel like women were always naturally the homemakers. And then the role of the man was to go out, create security, explore the landscape, see, you know, what was out there. And when women caught on to that thing.
I don't know if we caught on to it more than we exist in societies that function that way.
Yeah. When women, it's not that we, it's that created a patriarchal society, patriarchal systems. And so in order to thrive, women had to play a similar game. And it feels like that was maybe a big part of upsetting the balance, the original balance.
But then with that, are we saying that men are not civilized?
I don't think men are civilized. What was that even ever a question?
Yeah, I think we're definitely still very primal. So again, if we go back to men as hunters, women as gatherers, berries can't run from you, but wildlife can. You know, like if you think about them having to hunt, but the animals are intelligent too. They know what it means to be stalked and they know how to protect themselves. And so, you know, what they have to bring home is running and can run pretty fast. But even things like migration, if the thing that you're supposed to be bringing home is migrating hundreds of kilometers, you know, then I can also see the pursuit for greater access, right? For like trying to go to the place where the animals go or whatever it is. So therefore you need to really stretch where you think you can reach.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that perception, I think that perception really was founded on survival.
I'm going to put something to you. If domestic work were a male industry and a male problem, there would be more innovation in this space.
Absolutely disagree.
You disagree?
I disagree. I disagree.
I feel like it would get phased out or reimagined so much faster if it were a male industry. And I think it would lose a lot of its value currently is in the love, to be honest, for lack of a better word. You know? And in the nature of women as nurturers. I think that's a big part of its strength.
But in a way, I find that innovative. You know, that like the nurture part might not have been expected and then it became a part of it. I think that's a natural evolution or innovation to the role. You know, I think, I don't know, like I sort of imagine if men were in it, that maybe it would be as mechanical as it was designed to be, you know, and that maybe at most they would change the wage because, you know, fundamentally like men get paid more. So maybe the wage thing would be different.
I think there would be a lot more technology behind it. I think there is something in men and it would become completely mechanized, but maybe that's not a problem. If we start writing out some of the more sentimental attachments that come with being like commodifying a mother's love. You know what I mean?
I mean, I think men have more audacity. I don't know if they're necessarily more ambitious. I mean,
I think women can
ambitious,
but I think women can have that thing too. But I think with women, it's mediated by nurturing. Which is why for me it felt like the perfect balance. It feels like the reason that men's ambition is uncurbed is because they don't have a domestic, they have a different type of domestic instinct.
I'm still not convinced.
I think the outsourcing of nurture speaks to what is fundamentally wrong with the way that we live. So I'm saying now the role of domestic worker completely changes. It's got nothing to do with what it is. And domestic workers, like their role in the home, is replaced by machines. Would there be an emotional vacuum? would the kids suffer?
You know, I think kids suffer already with domestic workers. I think it would get worse. Because I think, like, especially this generation, whether it's busyness, whether it's addictions to social media, whether it's trying to keep up with the Joneses or the, you know, Kumars or whatever, all of those things are already distractions.
All them keezers.
I think there are, in general, a lot of distractions. I think, yeah, just the aspirations that parents have towards their children, those things already affect them gravely. I think the role that domestic workers play emotionally can never fill the role that the parents are supposed to. It can help, it can aid, but it can never be it. And so without them, I think there definitely would be an emotional void, but it would compound on what already exists.
Yeah, so it'd be even worse.
Yeah.
I wonder if, do you think with time that thing would then demand or require parents to address some of their scarcity?
I think it could. But it's not easy, like parents were great all the time in previous generations either.
No, it's true. And I mean, for me, the thing is, like the resentment thing, so the household income thing is huge. And I suppose people could adjust to living with one income. But that's just one component of it, right?
I'm not even sure about that, eh?
The emotional component.
But I'm not even sure about the being able to survive on one income.
So maybe the point here is that our lives are better with domestic workers than they would have been. Rather than thinking about, like, we're capable of more than we would have been. And maybe...
Yeah. But I mean, if we were to see that on an emotional or social scale, are we better socially? Are we better emotionally? Are we better psychologically?
I'm saying maybe we are.
Because I don't think so. I don't think so.
But I think, but would we be better or worse off without them? The regression that would happen out here. Like buildings would just start falling.
It's just like the liberties. And now this is very, very specifically about South Africa, because I can't necessarily speak about other countries. But the way that we treat help and help now extend to like every possible industry, any position that is a help. We are so morally regressive.
Yeah, for
with
sure.
The way that, and so, and to be morally regressive influences emotions, influences social cohesion dramatically. It influences so much that I really think like regression on that is a reflection of regression in a lot of other spaces.
If there were no help, more working class women would be unemployed and less able to support their families. How would the working class suffer?
I feel like there'd be more innovation and more refined emergent economies. I actually think that it regresses innovation to have domestic work as an option. And I think I also say this in relation to, for instance, the trolley pushers, right? Mm. And they got those big bags, and every week when our refuse gets taken, they quickly like sort out our things and then they go on their trolleys.
So you think it would kind of, that void would fill itself? It would
absolutely
correct itself economically.
Not necessarily correct, but yeah, more things would emerge. I think when it comes to something that would correct it, like it would have to also do with, you know, the sort of state of justice that the society is in. If it is an unjust society, the government might actually work against it. It might work to stop it or inhibit it. So I think it would still be like higher forces would still play a role in how it functions. But I think that those things would emerge. I think innovation would emerge.
That's interesting, because there's obviously like the immediate effects of taking away help now.
Yeah.
And then what that looks like 50 years, 100 years down the line, you know, and what might emerge.
But I think with something so entrenched, it would either need to be phased out or immediately replaced with something that fills the gap that you almost forget that it was there.
Oh my God, I really, you know, I wish more than anything I could test that out. Because it's so, it would be so interesting to find out what is the thing that our civilization is hinging on. It's in a way unfortunate that we're destruction at first, because I think so much construction comes from destruction. You know, so much progress comes from it.
Mm.
And I think a lot of things just need a burn.
I think we think we're destruction averse because why do we keep making things that are self-destructive?
This reminds me, and it might be our quote of the day. I read in a book called The Coming Insurrection. And it's
Coming?
Insurrection.
Insurrection? Mm. What is that?
Like when things fall apart, essentially, the coming. It's like a revolution.
Oh, okay.
Of sorts, but where things fall apart. And it says in that book, we live in a world that holds together only through the infinite management of its own collapse. Yeah, and it's that kind of destruction averse thing. Mm.
Mm.
That ends up getting in the way of more creative solutions rather than managing.
It's so crazy, though, because, yeah, I mean, that makes so much sense. Like,
problematic, yeah? So it almost feels like innovation is 10%, if that, 10%, if that. And a lot of innovation, mind you, is about that, right? It's about managing flaws in our society.
Yeah.
You know? And creating kind of quick fixes and band-aids. Okay. And then I would say potentially the other 90%. Of production and productivity falls into that infinite, the management of collapse.
And then there's the other form of innovation that builds on abundance, I think. That, like, builds on, you know, the potential for things to be greater than they are. And not greater for the sake of themselves, but, you know. Mm. It's to build on the existing possibilities.
Yeah, no, and I think that's the good kind, and that's the rare kind.
That doesn't think of destruction.
No, I think that is the good kind and the rare kind. Certainly the kind that I try to practice. Lord knows I don't have time for reality. Anyway, thank you guys so much for listening to our musings. This is a big part of our work, is just kind of entertaining different scenarios.
And seeing which ones can be made real.
Yeah. So MADE is very experimental, and yeah, thanks for always giving us an ear. How can they get hold of us?
We also just want to say we really do this because we get asked a lot of times, and we don't ever assume to have all the answers. And so we really do want you guys to know that we learn a lot from you guys as well. So we're always, you know, welcoming your comments and your ideas and your idealisms. They really are so rewarding to our process as well. And with that, make sure to follow our Twitter page at MADE Project. That's MAIDE Project, as well as our Facebook page, The MADE Sessions. Again, that's MAIDE. Have a very beautiful afternoon and see you soon.
Peace.
Central Revolution. I've got something important to tell you. CliffCentral.com.